Chapter 29. Idris. They shot Idris full of drugs to bring down the inflammation in his brain and to stem the internal bleeding. Then there were more drugs to combat the sluggishness brought on by the first batch. At least they quietened the hallucinations he'd been getting of motion at the corners of his vision, plus a sense of impending doom. Although as doom was, in fact, impending, maybe that hadn't been a symptom of anything other than actual current events. He was in a Hue infirmary on an orbital over Berlinhof, and if he listened carefully, he could hear staff arguing about which patients could be got out on what ships. He reckoned that the same conversation would be dominating the planet below, too. Oh, the powerful and wealthy who owned estates across the beautiful sun-kissed archipelagos of Berlinhof would have their own transport. But right now, a fair proportion of Hugh's entire bureaucratic staff would be performing the hard maths with every vessel they had left, working out who could be saved. Luckily, he had a ride. Solis had told him the Vulture God had docked at the same orbital. She'd gone to call the crew and tell them their errant son was still alive.
"I don't understand," he said. "It's never attacked like that before. Was it because we had the regalia?"
Beside his bunk, Delegate Trine was perched in a basic walker frame. Both legs had been removed, so he could be given a matching pair. Trine was sick of limping.
"If you're asking me to make an educated guess, old Confederate, I don't know."
The Hiver's face was disconcertingly absent, their projectors having literally given up the ghost. The remaining silvery bowl showed nothing but a smear of Idris's reflection.
"Perhaps this is what architects do if they encounter originator gear on a ship. But really, if it can deal with regalia on a ship, why not on a planet? If I were the hegemony, I'd start getting very nervous indeed."
The architect had launched a couple of its smallest spines into the Heaven Sword, inflicting significant but incidental hull damage. Then the spines had begun fragmenting out into soldiers, Trine had said. Individual mobile units. They had been made of the same crystal as the spines and took on many shapes. Some were humanoid, most were not. Many legs, no legs, serpentine, arachnoid, flying ray forms, and other less recognisable things. Hearing the unfamiliar descriptions, Idris had a creeping fear these were the species the architects had met, and there was only one way that meeting ever went. They were drawn from a great funerary list of extinct civilizations, one with a space on it, reserved for humanity. The stuff the soldiers were made from was simultaneously stone-hard and malleable. Accelerator shot that would pierce a starship's hull had just ploughed into and through them without damage. Energy weapons had refracted from them in rainbows of blinding light. One intruder had been cut in half when Partheni Tex explosively triggered a blast door. Overall, though, they had rampaged through the ship to the bridge without serious opposition. There they had taken the regalia. And when the deck crew and Trine had tried to stop them, they'd responded with lethal force.
"Quite remarkable, really," the Hiver reflected. "They used their limbs to cut and bludgeon close in. But they could also just shoot shards of themselves, like living accelerator guns, just chewing up their mass as ammunition. I count myself lucky that I merely lost a few limbs."
Idris closed his eyes, but found he couldn't imagine it.
"How did they do it?"
"Ah, well."
The loss of much of their body hadn't damaged Trine's pedantic tone.
as it happens, old chum, I was able to take some readings.
While they were attacking?
Indeed, yes.
While they were killing everyone?
For science. I judged that, when my time came to stand between these soldiers and their prize, I would prove a short-lived barrier. Judged correctly, as it happened. But before then, I was able to perform a little impromptu research. And the data raises some fascinating possibilities. I believe the soldiers were just puppets, manipulated by the architect through incredibly precise application of gravitic force.
Idris's eyes shot open, and he sat up in the bunk.
Yes!
I am glad you concur.
That makes sense. It was doing something when I was trying to contact it. It was absorbed, had to bend all its concentration to it. It was making its puppets dance.
Ah, the power, said Trine wistfully. The precision. If it weren't so horrible, it would be rather wonderful, don't you think?
Idris grunted.
I guess Borodin and the others are mad at the Parthenon for taking the relics out there. Now we've lost them.
Most likely, although the loss of the chance to study them is patently the greater woe, Trine said airily. Honestly, though, I suspect the councillors have bigger things on their minds right about now, such as saving their families.
Solace came back then, with a chair. It didn't look as smooth as the Partheni model he'd had, and he'd been terrible at driving that.
I can walk, he told her, hoping it was true. What's going on?
The crew is waiting for you, she said. In the end, he could walk, just, but only after Solace found him a cane. Leaning on it and on Solace, he finally made his way down to the docking ring and into what was surely the smartest, cleanest berth the vulture god had ever enjoyed. Behind him came the merry clatter of Trine's surrogate frame on its six legs. Ollie was working on the ship in her scorpion, and Idris saw a fair amount of clutter littering the pristine junk, parts that had been inside and were now outside.
Making room for refugees, he realised. Even the vulture god was needed.
Chris had been sitting with Kit and another Hanalambra over a holographic landstep board, but she jumped up when Idris came in. From her face, she'd expected to see him wheeled in on a gurney. Her relief was palpable. She hugged him, too hard so that he winced and she flinched away. Then Ollie tapped him on the top of the head with one of her manipulator arms, and Kit fiddled a greeting from his game.
I notice nobody is particularly concerned about my well-being, Trine pointed out.
We don't know you, Buzzboy, Ollie told them.
Entirely your loss, Trine waved their remaining arms dismissively.
They said you were hurt.
Chris looked Idris up and down.
I am hurt.
They said you failed, Ollie added.
Idris met her gaze, finding only the usual frankness, not an accusation.
The architect is still coming, he confirmed. We lost the relics and the ship got crippled.
He brought us home, Solace said defensively. Ollie bristled, then just nodded.
We're shipping out, Ollie said. They're finding us 20 colonists we can take. 20 through one space with no beds, Idris. But everyone's carrying. They're jamming 3, 4 into packet runners even.
Her face was set against tragedy. The way colonials had lived during the war and in the lean times after. It was habit that came back easily.
I mean, could be worse, right? Matey over there with Kit, named something like Hullaway or some damn thing, came in with a fleet of freighters. Now they've dumped their entire cargo into space. And maybe that's another 30,000 people if they can cram them in. If they can get them up from planet side in time.
The architect? Still coming, Chris confirmed. The Thunderchild put out to meet it, Solace said tonelessly. Also the Blake and the Perihelion, those two Hugh warships that turned up. Buying time with steel.
Idris felt his legs start to go, and Solace slid a crate behind him so he could collapse in safety.
The Heaven Sword barely survived the first direct hit, he said hollowly. The ships out there, they won't buy Berlinhof more than a cupful of time. It won't help.
I'll book you another big diplomatic meeting. You can discuss it with them, Ollie said. In the meantime, you come in with us or not? Because if you're out, we can fit in another couple people when we go.
But she was watching Idris with a sharpness that belied her air of unconcern.
I failed. But it wasn't too late.
He pictured the architect riding the skies of doomed Berlinhof, visible even during the daytime, crystals catching the sunlight. They'd have every trainee int at the liaison board working to stop it. Maybe that would be enough. But he didn't believe it. He could stay behind on the orbital and try one last time. But by the time the architect was that close, its mass dragging at the planet below, it would be too late.
I need a ship, he said.
The others were all staring at him.
Ships are kind of busy, Ollie pointed out.
Any ship with a gravitic drive, a packet runner, a shuttle, some rich kid's speedster, anything, Idris said desperately. I need a second chance. I have to get out there and do it again. I can save everyone. I know I can.
Idris, you were on the way to dying when you broke off, Solace told him.
Then it's my right to die trying, he shouted at her.
Then put his hands over his mouth, horrified at the great gout of anger and frustration that had come out of him. Solace nodded, then nodded again convulsively.
Come on, we'll go see Tact.
The orbital's corridors were cluttered with people, and it was hard to push through. Some were plainly evacuating, clutching bags, cases, and treasured possessions that were mostly going to end up on the dock floor.
We forgot, Idris thought numbly. We forgot what it was like to be hunted. And I've lived to see it again.
He wondered if it had been his destiny to see events travel full circle, the reason for his unnatural longevity, so he should now wither to bones and dust. Curse suddenly lifted. Then they found themselves facing a wall of purple, red, and gold, a hurrying band of men and women in high-collared robes. They were led by a man who had finally lost his geniality somewhere along the way.
Hieragrave Sathiel, Solace addressed him coldly. Get out of the way.
He gave her a wide-eyed stare, but there was neither fight nor authority in him at that moment. He shrank aside and his people flowed past, giving Solace plenty of clearance.
You wanted people to worry about the architects? Happy now? She shouted after him,
with venom worthy of Ollie. Sathiel made no reply as he fled. Monitor Superior Tact was closeted with Lucef Borodin when they arrived, but Solace made sufficient noise that they were allowed in. Idris suspected that the two diplomats didn't have much to discuss anyway at this stage. Borodin hadn't shaved that morning, and there were bags under Tact's eyes.
I need a ship, Idris insisted,
because he was all out of pleasantries.
Menhir Telemier.
He couldn't tell if Tact's cold manner was just her, or if she was judging his failure. And why shouldn't she? He certainly did.
A ship, he repeated. Get me out there again, on a ship.
The military force going to face the architect has already left, she said. Bring one back. Mynheer Tolemier, there's no time. They will be engaging shortly.
He had a sudden sense of disjointed time. The drugs had upset all his internal clocks. I need another chance.
Tact regarded him, her expression ambiguous.
That's it, is it?
Please, get me out there.
She glanced at Borodin.
I'll see what I can...
No,
the other diplomat said. He didn't seem very happy about it, but the word was out there. Tact raised an eyebrow. Idris felt time cascading like sand falling from a broken hourglass into the void. There would be no chance to turn it over again. No more when it was spent.
The colonial citizen Idris Tolemier will be leaving aboard the liner Sepulchrave, which is currently standing by, Borodin said flatly. Good ship, actually. My own family are on it, as are all non-essential Hue staff. I'll be heading there soon.
No, Idris told him. I'll leave on the Vulture God then, with my crew.
You won't.
He felt a keen need for Chris. But who'd have thought this old argument would raise its head now?
You can't!
Mynheer Tolemier,
Borodin addressed him. Saint Xavier died. They couldn't save her. Idris made a sound like grieving.
No!
She died, Borodin said heavily. And that makes you almost the last of the first wave. The hope our new intermediaries need. Which means we can't let you rush off and get killed facing this particular architect. I'm sorry.
I need a ship! I can save your fucking planet!
Idris shouted at him, at them both, at all the universe.
Just get me out there! I have a right to screw with my own head, if that's what I want.
His eyes narrowed, words coming too fast for thought.
You're Magden, right? Is that what this is about? Lose Berlinhof, then Magda's centre of the colonies, that what you want?
Idris.
Solace's hand was on his arm, trying to rein in his temper. Borodin just looked sad.
I'm going to have my people take you to the Sepulchrave now.
Idris looked attacked.
Do something!
She didn't meet his gaze.
This is very much out of my hands, I'm afraid.
And a warning look passed from her to Solace.
Right now, Partheni Rit is running very thin. This is a Hue matter.
Colonial soldiers were coming in, four of them. Solace tensed, but under Tact's stern gaze, she was not going to make a diplomatic incident of it.
I could save everyone,
Idris said, not shouting now, barely audible.
You just have to let me.
Get him away. Keep him safe, Borodin told his soldiers. I'll be along in time for the launch.
Borodin's people took Idris's stick and put him in a chair, which they drove for him. He kept trying to get out, but each time one of the soldiers pushed him back down. Not forcefully, respectfully even. In that part of his head that made him an intermediary, Idris felt the architect out there, getting closer. He didn't feel the world full of people about to be obliterated, but they weighed on him anyway. Bleakly, he knew that Borodin and Hue were going to be disappointed in him. He wouldn't be able to live with himself in this failure. He'd put himself outside their control, even if release came via the edge of a razor. After his first attempts at Berlinhof and Far Lux, it seemed profoundly unjust that he'd be remembered as the man who let a planet die. It was as though the architects were personally invested in erasing every good thing he'd ever done. Then they wheeled Idris into what would have been the wealthy passenger lounge in better times. It was currently crammed full of people, shouting, crying, arguing and holding each other. Through the clear far wall, he could see the sleek flank of the sepulchre, painted with a hodgepodge of colours, a rich man's attempt to replicate the old mismatch of colonial scarcity. There were 10 hatches with umbilicals connected to the ship, and Hugh's staff were diligently trying to hurry people aboard as efficiently as possible. The transparent window also revealed some of the planet below. Idris could see the lights of shuttles and lifters rising up from the gravity well, each one surely filled to the brim with the desperate and the lucky.
I could just shout, "Hey, someone else want my place?" and start a riot, he thought.
But he said nothing, just sat in the chair while his escort jockeyed, threatened and pulled rank to get closer and closer to the nearest hatch.
I could.
But he couldn't. There was nothing he could do. They reached the hatch with a trail of angry people resenting their every step. He wondered, with new horror, whether someone at the back of the queue had lost their place for his sake.
"I'm not going," he said,
and made a game effort to get out of the chair.
"Remain seated for your own safety, Mynheer," one of the soldiers said.
Idris grabbed at the hand that came for him, but he was too weak. And even if he'd been strong, the man would have been stronger.
"Help!"
he said ridiculously.
"I'm being kidnapped! I don't want to go! I can save the world!"
In the general hubbub, almost nobody heard him, and those who did plainly thought he was deranged.
"I'm an int!" he squeaked as the soldier shoved him back again. "I can stop it! Get me on a ship!"
Which was even more stupid because they were getting him on a ship, just not in the way he wanted.
"I'll take it from here, Sergeant," a new voice broke in.
Idris stopped shouting, because it sounded familiar.
"Who the hell are you?"
the lead soldier demanded. The newcomer was standing behind his chair, and Idris caught a flash of a holographic ID.
"Intervention board," the man said. "We're intervening."
The soldiers were all suddenly quite still.
"Sir, we have orders. Mordant House has orders too. We're requisitioning him."
"Sir, let's get out of the way and let these people board, shall we?"
When the soldier obeyed, Idris knew he wasn't going to end up on the sepulchre after all. Mordant House was the bogeyman of the colonies. Mordant House knew all your secrets. It protected the human sphere against all threats, and good luck if that threat was you.
"You need that chair, or can you walk?"
And at last, Idris shifted around enough to recognise the narrow, suspicious face of Hevea Mundi.
"If you take my arm, I can walk."
"Fine."
Mundi helped him up. The soldiers looked daggers, but none of them would challenge Mordant House.
"So,"
Idris said, as Mundi helped him out of the lounge, against a tide of panicked refugees.
"You have some Mordant House ship or something that can get me out there? Please don't tell me I'm just trading one kidnapping for another."
His heart sank when Mundi said,
"Not exactly."
But at least they were leaving the sepulchre far behind as they moved around the orbital ring towards the shabbier docks. They had to jostle and fight through every corridor, but Mundi seemed to have a way of finding every gap in the current to get ahead. Idris just let himself be tugged along. The man's way with crowds was like navigating unspace to the uninitiated, something magical and mysterious. They were well into the docking band that dealt with freight now, though the only freight shipping here was more people. And all the while, the architect was getting closer.
Agent Mundy, he said at last, where are we going?
Where do you think?
I'm not going to be some spook asset.
Idris pulled back, trying to resist. He might as well fight gravity. Mundy's long, boned frame bought him a lot of leverage.
I refuse to be some black ops sneak pilot for your assassins.
Mundy stopped. Black ops sneak pilot? He queried. That's a job description where you come from, is it?
I'm not.
Tolemier, I am risking a great deal on my assessment of you, not least my job. So just shut your yap and come with me, would you? Because right now, I'm attracting all the bad kind of paperwork, and I am just desperate to get started on the last report of my career after I drop you off. He gave Idris's arm a final yank, hit a door release with his elbow, and they were standing in a familiar dock. And there was the vulture god. Idris looked from the ship to Mundy and back. Solis was heading towards them, her eyes on the mordant houseman.
I didn't think you'd do it, she said.
Well, I reckon you and I are both exceeding our orders today, Mundy replied.
You're shipping out with them, right? You want a berth?
He laughed harshly.
That would just about put the nail in the coffin, wouldn't it? No, I'll stay here and clean up the mess I made.
Tolemier?
Idris jumped.
What?
I met you.
What?
I sat down with you, remember? We had a chat, back before the harvest turned up and we had to part ways. Right now, I am really hoping I'm as good a judge of character as I want to be. You want a ship? Here's your ship, if you can talk them into it. I've also got you departure clearance, at least until someone clocks on and overrules me. Go use it.
Then the man was retreating, seeming to shift crabwise out of the hangar before vanishing, because Mordant House never did anything in a straightforward way. Idris turned to the ship, the unlovely, oft-repaired scavenger hauler that was the vulture god. The drone bay hatch was open, but he couldn't see any of the crew.
I know you all heard that, he called.
Well?
Okay, are we going or not?
Ollie's voice boomed from the speakers.
Because I just spent 10 minutes getting us all ready to leave. Just get your ass on board. Her too.
When he reached command, they were all there. Ollie in her walker, Chris in Rollo's chair, Kittering in his own, and Trine too, to his surprise. Their arms were still mangled, but they had new legs, and their face had been restored to its phantom glory. Solis stepped in behind him and leant on the back of the pilot's chair as he took his place at the board.
Look,
he started awkwardly.
You're going to say we don't need to come, that it's dangerous, Chris told him. Idris, in the general ranking of people important enough to get a berth off planet, just where do you think we fit? If we're not getting out on the Vulture, we're not getting out at all. So we're sticking on board, thank you very much.
Speak for yourself, Trine declared. Some of us are an ambassador.
Taking her out,
Ollie announced, and the ship's bones creaked around them as they lifted off from the dock and passed out of the station's gravitic field into open vacuum.
Idris, she's yours when you're ready. Take her away.
He'd wanted the crew in suspension beds, even for the stutter jump in system. But there wasn't time. They'd been through it before anyway. They were practically unspace veterans. He argued the case as he slung the vulture god away from the orbital, ignoring the angry comms chatter they left in their wake. A couple of Hugh military skiffs hailed them, but they were too little, too late. Enough politics. He sketched out the maths of the stutter jump, always with the sense of Berlinhof as a crushing weight poised at his back. His target destination was unexpectedly complicated, a nightmare maze of graphitic distortions, even without the architect itself, with its disproportionate mass shadow. Seeing the mess he was dropping into, he couldn't quite believe he'd lifted the heaven sword out of it. But then, it wasn't just the enemy out there anymore. The fighting started. Even at this remove, he could sense the slight shudder as the Thunderchild and its impromptu allies deployed their gravitic weapons. They were trying to crack the substance of the architect as its ponderous will sought to pin them down. And the god was in, falling away from the real into the dream that was unspace and out, exploding back into existence and into the thick of it. For a moment, he could still see the ragged shawl of space-time bent a thousand ways by the fighting. The Partheni warship was deploying its mass loom, four times the power of the batteries they'd used at the first Battle of Berlinhof. Idris saw a spray of cracks flower across those crystal mountains as the strike hit home. But they blurred into wholeness just a moment later as the architect reshaped its own substance to heal. Further off, Idris's instruments reported on the Blake, a colonial-built monster shaped like a lump hammer. It had launched a withering storm of super-accelerated shot from its cannon, most of which whirled off to oblivion as the architect leant on the universe to shift the gradient. Solace took her place at Idris's back, medkit ready in her hands. Chris and Kittering were just staring at the monstrosity dominating space outside. "We're too late," the Partheni whispered.
"Not too late," Idris insisted,
although even as he spoke, he felt the architect wrench space around the Thunderchild, breaching its overstressed hull in three places.
"I need a pilot."
Silence from the drone bay.
"Ollie, you there?"
Holy fuck! Look at that thing!"
"It's just like before," Idris told her. "No different to last time."
"She wasn't at Berlinhof the first time," Solace said quietly.
"Idris, you famed bastard! I was born in 90-fucking-4!
Ollie threw in over comms.
"Believe it or not, this is my first architect, see, right?"
But she sounded more together now.
"Ollie, I..."
"You need a pilot."
Ollie's voice came over the comms.
"I got it. Show me where to go."
The others were waking from the spell too. "Survival opportunities few and falling," Kit announced, skittering over to his own board. He was throwing up unwelcome statistics, specifically the efficacy of the Vulture God's gravitic drive once the architect caught hold of them. They punched a long way above their weight, but they weren't a warship. Shielding wasn't what they were optimised for.
"I know, Kit. I... Take us in, Ollie. I'll... find a way. I promise." "I don't have a way. Maybe it won't look at us. Maybe we're too small for it to see."
But he knew that wasn't true. To the architect, a single atom and an entire planet were equally worthy of adjustment. The Thunderchild had launched a flight of 0 points now, little single-woman fighters. Their size wouldn't help, but many could make a difference. The architect had a limit to how much it could divide its Goliath-like attention. And yet, they would die, all of them. They knew it. They were buying time for Berlinhof, just the same as before. The Vulture God streaked on, a battered old junk hauler that had no place in the war zone. The other Hugh cruiser out there, the perihelion, was hailing them. It was warning them off, as though they might somehow have missed the crystal half-moon out there murdering everyone. Chris proclaimed they were the cavalry, the intermediary program here to save the day.
Kit, Idris said through clenched teeth, I know we're basically screwed, but do what you can with the drive to get us some shielding. Just enough to fend off the worst.
Bahani's reply went untranslated, which was probably just as well. But Kittering bent to the task anyway, slender mandibles rattling away at his board, sabotaging the clean running of the gravitic drive to twist space around them. Meanwhile, Ollie had the Bricator system hauling them forward from point to point, clipping them in a zigzag course into the heart of the fight. Idris would rather be doing that himself. It was his skill set, after all. But he had a different job right now, and one nobody else could help him with. Solace's hand closed on his shoulder, and he felt a moment of perfect stillness. It was as though all the dueling gravities and energies out there had cancelled each other out, just for a fraction of a second, leaving only calm and peace. Idris felt the architect then, its vast and incurious mind that was focused on turning all these vessels into junk art and filigree, remaking the universe one clutch of matter at a time. He made himself small and sharp and stabbed like a rapier, and everything receded from him. Chris's voice over the comm, Ollie's swearing, his own body, with all its frailties and injuries, all someone else's problem.
We are here. Stop killing us. We are here.
He could feel the architect's ponderous attention shifting from place to place across the battlefield. Here, a zero pointer was snuffed out, pilot and vessel turned into lace and sent spinning into the endless void. There, clawing for the perihelion, the huge ship's shielding failing, the ring of its gravitic drive rupturing into space. Idris felt the shift and shunt of the architect's thoughts as it caught the ship's broken pieces and remade them. Each one became a work of art, worthy of a master. Some of the pieces had been crew, but the architect made no distinction. In his far, far distant ears, over Chris's comms connection, Idris could hear screaming. He felt that he was standing by the feet of a great, slow giant, as it tore down a city, block by block. The buildings fell, the people in them screamed, and then they were crushed. But the giant only cared about urban clearance. It didn't understand that there were living things in the stone edifices it ripped down.
Except it must. They learned it at Far Lux. That's why they stopped.
He was a tiny little man, beating at the giant's heel, hammering at its smallest toe, shrieking himself hoarse. He was the mote in the mind of God, lost in that labyrinth of mirrors and moving parts.
Why have you come back?
And one of his tiny ant punches registered, because the faintest feather edge of the architect's consciousness acknowledged his existence. Then he was slammed back into his body because the vulture god was spinning out of control. Trine slammed, complaining, into the wall, and Idris was half out of his chair. He was only saved from breaking his head by Solace grabbing him and hauling him back. Ollie was incandescent over the comms. She turned a cubic mile of void blue with oaths Idris had never even heard before, as her scorpion frame slid across the drone bay to crash into its closed hatch. For a moment, she lost all connection to ship systems and they were helpless. Adrift. Then she had the vulture underway again, limping and shuddering.
No more, thank you, no,
Kit rattled off, sending damage reports to all boards. The vulture was just about in one piece, but they'd accrued 10 years of wear and tear in as many seconds.
We've lost the perihelion, Chris choked out. Gone. Dead.
No more. No further impact. All tolerances exceeded. No,
Kittering insisted.
We're not going to make it.
The moment the architect turned back to find them, that would be it. They couldn't move fast enough, shield hard enough. They just weren't strong enough to wrestle the monster for control of local space for even a moment. And if tiny zero pointers could be pinched into oblivion, detected by the all-seeing architect, how could they escape its notice? Idris felt his throat go dry.
Unless...
Ollie!
He yelled into comms.
Busy!
You're linked to the ship.
I'm flying the fucking ship, what do you think?
Linked. Really linked, right?
Space shuddered about them. The gravitic shockwave of someone else being wrung out of existence. Yet even with its focus elsewhere, he could still feel the there-ness of the architect. This close, it felt as though its crystal needles were being driven into his brain.
I'm going to stutter jump us again.
And Ollie would think he was quitting, getting them out. But he went on.
Only for a fraction of a second. You'll feel it like a big old shock to the system, but no more.
Idris,
I need you to just keep flying her, Ollie. I'm feeding you coordinates for where you'll be flying from when we exit Unspace. And I'll keep doing it, again, then again. And you have to keep up with me, okay? So, are you linked to the ship? Nav systems, sensor suite, all that stuff. Your eyes, your limbs?
Ollie made a croaking sound over the comms. He chose to interpret that as a yes and jumped them into Unspace. Except the moment they crossed out of the reel, he was slamming them back in again. He could hear Chris's yelp, the squealing complaints of Kittering. They were demanding to know what he was doing, and the ship was just tumbling now, falling towards the jagged horizon of the architect, utterly without control.
Ollie!
I got it, damn you, Idris! Give me a...
And the Brocator drive kicked in, hauling them away, hand over hand, further from that hungry crystal landscape. Idris felt the architect register them once more, reach for them. And he jumped them again. Once more, he fed Ollie his calculations a split second before they went. Again they were gone, becoming unreal. Then they were back, 100 kilometres from where they'd been. Now his head was splitting. The pain of those abrupt seat-of-the-pants jumps, the pain of trying to contact the architect, all getting together and raising a family inside his skull. But Ollie was on it now. She was managing the ship from the moment it burst out of Unspace, barreling them through a formation of zero pointers, winking like stars on every side, flying the vulture god as though she'd been born with wings. Ollie Antimo, born a stranger to her human body, had decided, why limit her efforts to that? Any frame, any surrogate shell could be hers. Now she was riding the vulture god's sensor data, eating the nav information Idris fed her. She saw each new emergence point and assimilated it before they popped into existence there, always desperately fleeing ahead of the architect's angry strikes. And even as his hands jumped and jumped them, Idris let his mind out again. Once more, he fell into the fractured maze of the architect's body that was simultaneously its brain. Again, he was seeking that point of consciousness within, seeking an audience, so he could plead for the survival of his people.
He was plunging through ablating crystalline layers of thought and desire. His mind shouted, "We are here!"
But the architect knew this already. It didn't care. And this time around, it really did want to kill them, to unmake their worlds, despite knowing that myriad little minds lived upon them.
Why? Why hate us now?
I don't hate you.
Those weren't the words. It wasn't quite like that. But his mind took the stimuli it encountered and translated them, awkward as Kittering's artificial voice, trying to give words to Hanalambra concepts. Stunned, he was back in his body, just as a great fist slammed against the vulture god's hull and made it ring like a gong. Abruptly, alarms and red warning signs were all over his board, and Kit was reeling off the damage.
"Drone bay!" Chris got out. "Breach in the drone bay! Ollie!"
"Still here," came her grim voice. "Air's gone. But I got me own, haven't I? Fucking clinging on, aren't I? Only..."
There was a pause. Idris blinked, finding the world red-washed. He had blood in his eyes, and his head jumped and stuttered as randomly as their course through unspace. Solis tore open his tunic, the cheap printed fabric parting like paper. She clamped something to his chest, part of the grab bag of medkit junk the vulture had accumulated over the years. Was it interacting with his heart in some way? He felt only a distant curiosity as he waited for Ollie to keep speaking. He hoped Ollie would keep speaking.
"Trine," the drone specialist said at last. "Here and present. Get in here. Need your help. I've got a lot of failing systems. Took a bit of a knock here." "I am not a technician," the Hiver said uncertainly. "You are proof against vacuum, you roach bastard. I need you to get in here and do what you can to the Scorpion before my life support gives, okay? I would do it myself, but I'm too busy saving all your asses."
"Well, in that case, I shall lower myself," Trine said with dignity. "Myrmidon Solis, as requested."
And they passed something to the Partheni.
"If I should not return from this..."
"Just go!"
Chris shouted at them. The phantom face looked mortally offended, but they went.
"I'm going in again. We're jumping,"
Idris tried to say, but he couldn't get the words out, probably because he didn't seem to be breathing. Solis was on it, though. Whatever she had plugged into his heart had oxygenated his blood until his autonomic systems stopped sleeping on the job. His brain was still fed, and that was all he needed. He rolled his eyes in thanks, but she had no time for that, absorbed in the job of keeping him alive. So he just continued, passing another set of sums to Ollie, keeping them always one jump ahead of the architect's next sally. And he forced his mind back into it, trying to pick up where he'd left off.
"If you don't hate us, why kill us?"
He met a vast wall of alien thought and scaled it, driving his hands into the gaps between nameless concepts. He navigated impossible logical contradictions, finding a mind so old that human concepts of time did not apply. A focus so powerful that it could rework a planet at the molecular level, not as an act of brute force, but one of loving, careful artistry, placing every atom perfectly in place, fit for purpose.
What purpose, though?
Why did the architects rebuild the universe, one inhabited world at a time?
surely not merely because they could. Another near miss, distant cursing from Ollie, Chris trying to liaise with the Blake and the Thunderchild. Idris fell out of the architect again, clawing at it, plummeting, forever. The space around them was a constellation of ships, hundreds of zero-pointers bringing their gravitic drives together to fracture those crystal spines. All while the Thunderchild's mass looms boomed and hammered soundlessly, and the Blake unleashed hell. It was pumping out such blistering salvos of accelerator shot that even the architect could not catch every falling sparrow of it. And it was still not enough. It was not even a hundredth of enough. They were flies in the face of God. They were just powerful enough to be worth obliterating. And still, Idris tried to get to the centre of the architect. He was beating on the doors of its brain, but he couldn't get in.
"New challenger, unexpected potential trouble," Kit reported.
He harvested more data from the boards while trying to shore up their shielding. Idris came back to himself, realising that another ship had stutter-jumped into the midst of the fight. The Hume military launch that had hailed them as they fled the orbital.
"You can't be serious. They've come to arrest us. Don't they know there's a war on?"
The Hue ship was just tumbling, the shock of the in-system jump throwing its crew.
"But if they stutter-jumped, that means..."
He sensed the other mind then, scrabbling at the architect's consciousness. Andekka Talmar, the volunteer. She'd come out here like he had, still volunteering, trying to make a difference. He fed another set of coordinates to Ollie, and presumably Trine was doing some good down there because she was still alive and guiding the ship. There was the shock of another jump, and now he couldn't see, couldn't open his eyes. There was Chris's voice, Solace's voice, all very distant now. The whooping of alarms, too. Thoroughly someone else's problem.
"Perhaps we've just hit the limit of the Vulture's medical kit. Oh, well."
He could feel Andekka out there, fighting and failing. But she'd caught the architect's attention, just for a moment. He couldn't coordinate with her, but he could adapt to what she did. He slid in past her, using the gaps she'd opened in the architect's concentration. Its mind was elsewhere as it tried to discover the cause of this latest pinprick irritation. And he was in. It happened as easily as that. The perfect insertion of mind into mind.
"Thread the goddamn needle one last time."
And he was in a place of eerie stillness, of pure Zen calm. A single step away in every direction, he could see it all. The battle, the ships, the planet, the wider universe, all as remote as if painted in some abstract expressionist style onto canvas and hung on a wall. A way of looking at the universe that made it seem like no more than bad art. Something that could be reimagined, perfected. He sensed a presence then, though not the looming, brooding presence that attended Unspace. This was something transcendent and beautiful, wise, yet infinitely destructive. It was the thing he had howled, "We are here," to, back at Far Lux, so long ago, which had ended the war. It was the moat of I am within the vast structure of each architect. It became aware of him, not as it was aware of the ships, as burrs and abrasive parts of the universe outside. That must be sanded down for it to pass smoothly by and achieve its purpose. But as him, Idris Tolemier,
the thinking individual, the intermediary.
Why? Stop! Please!
He tried to picture all the people on Berlinhof, failed almost immediately, but something got through. He perceived something in response, but not thoughts, not feelings. These were vast, shunting blocks of intent and desire that had to be crammed into a funnel, crushed down meaninglessly small, in order to be apprehended by a human consciousness. We do not hate you. We do not want to kill you. And then Idris saw a barrage of images as it picked apart his memories, fragment by fragment. It dissected him, laid out the complete contents of his mind upon a table, filed him, catalogued, tried to understand this odd evidence of a primitive civilization on the very point of extinction. He found himself thinking, without consent or volition, about the liaison board, and about the Boyarin Piter Oscaro, trying to lay claim to him under Magdan law. He thought about the Hivers fighting to gain independence from their human creators, about the darkest parts of old Earth history, back when they still taught it, about shackles and chains, duress, mastery and ownership. The architect found all these things as it taxonomized the contents of his mind and judged them relevant to the topic under discussion. He kept expecting it to manifest as a kindly old grandfather, a white-bearded god, even as a monstrous demon. But it was never able to reduce itself to anything so banal or human. All it could do was pick over his thoughts like a beachcomber, holding those which caught its attention up to the sunlight. Until he understood.
You stopped. Before.
Whips, thumbscrews, chains, orders, punishment, servitude.
Please, not here. Not now. Please.
He had the architect's whole attention now. Out there, the Thunderchild and the others were battering away ineffectually at its substance. But it had ceased to retaliate. The whole awful majesty of its concentration was on one Idris Tolemier, intermediary, first class.
Please!
The moments cascaded about him, stolen from his memories and thrown in his face. Grief, loss of family, trauma, love, curling up beside Solace in the infirmary camp, saying harsh words about Rollo because he'd loved the man like family, and that was how you did it. Shouting at Hevea Mundi on Lungcrow Station because he was terrified of ending up with the liaison board and all their evils.
Please!
Asking for himself now, because he didn't want to be the man who'd failed to save Berlinhof, because, even though he was definitely dying, he'd never be able to live with himself. A moment of perfect clarity. The acceptance of pain. The willingness to go back to punishment. Because, of the two of them there, one of them must face failure. The choices were between Idris punishing himself or the architect meeting the wrath of... who? What possible power could compel them? But there was something there. That was what he had learned. There was an intent behind the architects, a purpose that was not native to them. A hand that brandished the whip.
Please!
And it left. The whole immensity of it falling away into unspace from the real. It abandoned the Berlinhof system, leaving a scattering of ships and filigreed debris spinning in its wake.